she stares into the flames. It was the signal to begin a general coup. The arch-governor of Mars was shot in the head by his butler within his sanctum in Argia. Severo was captured on Earth, howlers slaughtered. More than a dozen others were killed. Valdir, heat of my heart, you say Amel here was loyal? But he received coded message from Deep Space Relay Station, home to Gold Intelligence. I was to be assassinated with the rest.
Amel is loyal, Valdir says.
I sensed a quavering of his spirit long ago, Asgard confirms.
You fat devil, Valdir bellows. You will be the death of us all. Maybe you sense a quavering of my next. I know your game, serpent. I know how you coil close to heat, for the cold blood in your own veins.
Am I stupid, heat of my heart? Sephi says to Valdir. To act only on the senses of shaman? To be guided like puppet? It was Xenophon who brought this to me, not Asgard.
Valdir's anger cools somewhat as he spares a look at the trusted white.
For some time, Amel has been passing information to this relay station, to his gold overlords, including my diet and list of preferred vintages. A poisoned bottle was found in his possession. He served me many years, but was rotten in the end.
Valdir grows quiet. To him, Xenophon's word is worth far more than Asgard's hunches. Yet he can't accept it. By the way Sephi's looking at me, I might just be joining Amel in the fire. She's cleaning house. She watches me for a moment, her black eyes peering deep into me before flicking away toward Electra, who is still on her feet.
Who did it? The girl demands. How did the mob kill Virginia Au Augustus? Is my father alive? Tell us.
We do not know, Xenophon answers.
Publius Sue Caraval seems to be the instigator and perpetrator of the coup, and allied with Arch-Imperator Zahn and Vox elements in the government.
We have confirmed this with Niobe Au Telemanus, who now leads the Ecliptic Guard to Luna to demand the Sovereign's return. Whether she is dead or alive, we do not know.
Publius? That dreary little shit!
Electra is stunned.
Nah, he doesn't have the juice, even with Zahn.
He is likely the puppet of Atalantia, Sephi says.
At that, Pax loses his ability to listen. He stands, quivers and bolts from the opera house. Electra glares down at Sephi.
How long have you known? 3 days? You cold bitch.
Sephi nods.
World is hard. He must be too.
You weakened her by leaving, Electra snaps. You abandoned them. This is your fault, I know it. He knows it. We all fucking know it.
Your mother weakened her too?
Electra flinches at that and storms after Pax. Sephi jerks her head and Asgard pursues. Valdir watches the child go with a deep sense of sadness. He's more complicated than just a warrior. The loyalty he feels to Darrow must be immense. And I wonder if Sephi isn't the villain here after all.
You didn't have to do it like that, I say. I did not bring you here to play nursemaid to children or lecture me, Mr. Horn. You asked me when first we met what Julie I would pay for her firstborn. Today, I tell you, she has provided us with information and ore ships on which to transfer my forward legions under nose of Republic fleet.
At Sephi's instruction, Xenophon still steps forward to fling a holo onto the opera stage where Amel's remains burn. Blueprints unfold from a tiny moat like the tendrils of a jellyfish. My eye darts, my brain decrypts, analyzes, reverse engineers the Byzantine mess to see the hundreds of complexes, sophisticated kill zones, subterranean bunkers. No, not bunkers. I feel for my Z dispenser. I was right. You want to start another war.
No, I want to end war. The Republic breaks under its own weight. Obsidian must not. These are schematics for helium mines of Cimmeria. I was hesitant to act when Virginia sat upon morning chair. Now, no precautions, no hesitation. We strike.
The Queen's smile crawls upward, her devious nature burning hot and bright beneath that ice exterior.
Helium is blood of empires, Mr. Horn. Master it, master destiny, and I will master our destiny. In 1 week's time, we take mines of Cimmeria and the continent as our homeland. It is time to test your Skoogie.
They are not ready, Valdir says with a worried glance to Freyhild. My battle plan will get you the...
Seffi holds up a hand.
You break planets, Valdir. I do not want a broken Mars. That is the last resort. I want a Mars that welcomes me as protector, as great mother. Mr. Horn, I need defense grids lowered. Tell me, are your Skoogie ready?
With the smell of Amel's burning body in my nostrils, I look at Freyhild, who gives me an eerie smile.
Yeah, they'll do your dirty trick.
World's burning anyway.
Chapter 38. Lysander. The Horizon. I wake, feeling more tired than before I slept. It is still dark out. The quiet sounds of the soldiers preparing for the day's trek north surround me. I sit up and gag at the pain of my wounded face. It is infected. My dreams were warped by fever and fear. Again the chair, again the door, again the shadows and laughter on the other side. I don't know how I get to my feet. It is in silence that we set out into the cool dark. Kalindora walks closer to me now, always keeping herself between me and Cicero. Despite her grievous wound, I feel safer in her shadow. She whispers quiet poems to herself as the sun begins to rise. What think you the dead are? Why, dust and clay, what should they be? 'Tis the last hour of day. Look on the west, how beautiful it is. Vaulted with radiant vapours, the deep bliss of that unutterable light. Perhaps the only comfort which remains is the unheeded clanking of my chains, the which I make and call it melody. The words keep me walking, but temperatures ascend as the sun climbs over the mountains. Just when I believe I can't go another step, I feel Kalindora's hand on my lower back, steadying me. Always it lingers there, and I find I miss it when she takes it back. We walk and walk until we break for water in the middle of a playa.
Nobody move, Cicero says.
We freeze at the tension in his voice. He gestures slowly to a cactus, beneath which is a hole in the hard pan.
If you value life, slowly back away.
We put 100 meters between us and the animal hole.
What was that?
I ask him, when we collapse down for water in the shadow of a yellow cactus as tall as 5 men.
Hydra burrow, he says.
They hunt sunbloods. We'd be a nice little aperitif for them. He wanders off to inspect a nearby cactus blossom. Kalindora squats in the dirt beside me and stares east. The remains of an unmarked bomber lie several kilometers off. Several of the greys hack at cacti with utility knives to suck water from the meat. It's barely worth the effort. The storms have thrashed the flora. I take enough water from the canteen to fill my mouth. There will be none left after this break. Take more, Kalindora says. That burn is sapping you dry. She can barely stand herself. We don't have enough. Take more. There's always a chance we'll find something. Maybe in that bomber. But no chance at all if you die now. She tilts the canteen, and I swallow another mouthful. She sits down beside me and splays out her long legs. The fabric of her thermoskin, like mine, is caked white with chalk. While the lips are calm and the eyes cold, the spirit weeps within. Kalindora smiles softly as I recite. I see you're still fond of Shelley. Does it help take your mind away? No, she replies. I just don't think anyone should die without hearing poetry one last time. Whether she means me or herself is unclear. I'm going to have hot tea, she says suddenly. What? When we get back, a hot tea and a cold bath. How about you? Frelich juice and vodka, I say. Frelich juice and vodka? She squints at me, finding more meaning in it than I meant. Why? I don't know. I've never even had it before. That seems to puzzle her. Octavia said that her greatest mastery of the mind's eye came when she could make herself taste a food simply by thinking of it, I say. Well, I can do that, she says. Watch. Dust. She licks her lips. Gods, just like the real thing. I am unable to smile from the burn. What's it like, she asks. The mind's eye? It is difficult to explain. She waits for me to try. Have you ever had a moment where you couldn't fail, where everything seemed slow, except you, like you were the center of all gravity, all time, and your thoughts themselves were second to your actions? Sometimes, in combat. Bad comparison, I say. You were a sailor before, yes? She considers. Sometimes, when the wind is strong, you slide like a knife over the water. It feels like you're flying. Then you have touched it. But imagine you could control that peace, that sense of harmony, and summon it according to your will. She reconsiders me. You can do that at will. At times, Octavia could like this. I snap my fingers. It isn't without flaw. It didn't make her a warrior equal to Aja, but it made her very dangerous. She said it could even stop poison if mastered. All poison? I'm about to answer when I see movement to the north. I squint out at the bright chalk flats. Amidst a cloud of dust, a herd of pale sunbloods race one another against the horizon. Not one, not ten, but hundreds. I stand up to watch, wondering if it is real or a desert mirage. Either way, it is one of the most beautiful things I have ever seen. Then I realize it is not one another they race. Not again, Kalindora whispers. A dark smudge rolls across the desert behind the stampede.
Sandstorm! Cicero shouts. Damn that man! Damn him! Everyone, to the bomber! That sand will shred us to the bone. Hurry!
We bolt to our feet and run east toward the wreckage, but the greys and I are falling behind. Kalindora tries to help me along, but with me weighing her down, she'll never make it. Uninjured, Cicero and his golds chew up the kilometers with their rangy legs. They don't even bother looking back for us. The wall of sand is close enough now that it seems to scrape the sky. It swallows a dozen horses whole. I shove Kalindora away. Go! She bats my arms out of the way and lunges to try and pick me up with one arm. I back away from her. Go! She glances at the encroaching wall, then back at me, with real fear in her eyes. For a moment I think she will stay. Then she turns and sprints away, long strides making her bounce like a jackrabbit in the low gravity. I am left alone. I face the wall and grip Cassius's razor as if it will save me. Everything has darkened. Dust obscures the sky. The greys continue to try to make it to the bomber. They won't. I search for some hiding place, some boulder or wreckage to shelter behind. There is nothing. Nothing. A cool certainty slides over me. I race back the way we came and see dirt swirling over the Hydra burrow's entrance. It is wide enough for a red, but not for me. Flattening my thumb against the shape sensor, I form the razor into a wide-mouthed falchion and chop furiously at the ground, expanding the hole's circumference. The wall is nearly upon me. I dive into the burrow at the last second, my shoulders clear, my hips stick. Ripping skin from my sides, I crawl into the darkness, just as the wall hits. Chapter 39 Lysander The Mind's Eye There is a monster sharing the darkness with me, a dread creature I cannot see or hear for the howling darkness of the storm outside. I can sense it moving, judging the creature that has invaded its home. I have never seen a Hydra with my own eyes. 500 years ago, the Votum commissioned a sect of Lunese carvers to create them, so that they might have something challenging to hunt. Some say the carvers were far too ambitious in their designs. I lie trembling on my back, with my razor rigid and pointed outward from my belly as the hours creep past. They are the longest hours of my life, especially when a mass of scales rested against my leg. The Hydra is digesting another meal. When the storm finally passes, I hear a faint hissing, like dry skin dragged over tin. Very carefully, I slide backward out of the Hydra's burrow, keeping my razor pointed downward in case it decides to make a last-minute meal of me. When I finally see the sun again, I stumble away from the hole and almost vomit from tension. Only when I am far enough away do I fall on my back and start to laugh and cry. I never knew I'd be so happy to not be a Hydra's lunch. After a half a minute, the sun begins to burn my face. I sit up and squint into the waste. The plier is cleansed. Cacti sway like leftover shish kebab sticks. No life stirs. No debris can be seen. The greys have been swallowed by the desert. I make my way over to the bomber, now just a hump of sand, and call for Kalindora. There is no answer, nor is there when I call for Cicero. I dig through the sand and find nothing but two decaying blue pilots, half eaten by predators. They wear no insignia but a child's face wreathed in serpents. Gorgons. This was one of Atlas's bombers. The hold is empty. The magazines have ruptured inward. Unfired missiles lie in the hold. A ration bar wrapper lies on the floor, one of ours. Outside the bomber, I find indentations in the sand, indicating the passage of a shuttle. A spent railgun battery lies on the ground, not one of ours. Sun Industries tech. I squint south and see the shuttle as a dot, racing for Heliopolis. Kalindora must be on it. Another captive for the Rising. I go back inside the bomber and collapse in the hold amongst the unfired missiles. I lie there, forlorn, until I fall asleep. When I wake, my loneliness in the silence is absolute. Pytha knew this was coming. But I believed the myth of war. Worse, I thought myself special, immune to the horrors lesser men face. Diomedes was right. All men are tiny before the storm. There is nothing but pain from my ruined face and deep, indescribable exhaustion. Serafina is dead. The alliance may be broken because of it. My Praetorians, rotting or captured, the tears sting my wounds as I weep. Why did I betray Cassius? For this? Why did I return to this horrible place? My hopes of a united goal, of peace, now seem laughable. Not only did I overestimate my own importance, I underestimated the scope of war. There is no escape from this. It will eat us all. I could flee this pain, find refuge in the mind's eye meditation, and slip slowly into the void as my body fails. But I cannot give grandmother that honor. She did something to me, something I cannot understand. I was a child who needed love in the shadow of his parents' deaths. Instead, she beat me into the shape of a cup and poured her lessons into me. I will not let those lessons be my last act in this world. Cry not, mortal child, a voice says in the darkness. They come on wings of sable to rend your precious flesh and send you to the doom which lies beyond this realm of pain. I sit up. Am I going mad? Lie still, and it will end. Lie still, and the seed of Selenius will wither to time. Who is there? I ask. A translucent mass squats in the shadows of the downed aircraft. It seems immense. The air warps above the ghost cloak with horn-like projections. If it is a ghost cloak and not the madness of the desert creeping in, dwell not on me, mortal. Nocturnal devils are afoot. Awake, arise, or be forever fallen. I hear it now. The sound of grav boots. I watch through a fissure in the hull as 700 armored men land in the night. Seneca's voice drifts from the darkness. Lysander! Oh, Lysander, come out! Come out, little boy! Death has come. So Ajax has sent his boar of a bodyguard to finish the task. The thought of dying at the hands of some thin-blood brute fills me with irrational fear. I am not fit for this world of rough killers. My hand goes to the side of my neck, where I received my mission implant. They tracked it at last. I turn to the man in the darkness. Help me, I beg. I help no man who does not help himself, and no man do I help who is no boon to me. 6 years I have collated knowledge to become the mightiest of mortal vessels, yet one morsel still eludes my voluminous mind, hidden in no fury, no books, trusted to no digital void. It lingers yet, this knowledge, in one sepulchre. 4 days I have followed. 4 days you have denied me my quest. I must know the mind's eye. Show it to me, or perish. The air ripples as the man slips out of the ship. Lysander, Seneca taunts, there's nowhere to run. Will the heir of Selenius die in a rat hole? Have dignity in the end? Your ancient blood demands it. The thin bloods chuckled at one another. I spotted 7 of them, all in fresh pulse armor. I won't stand a chance. But will I die here, cowering, or will I die with dignity? As I stand, my feet disturb the spilled munitions on the floor, and I sense a fresh variable. 7 peerless, scarred, stand in the darkness, as I emerge barefoot. Their predatory iron leopard war helmets watch with no human emotion. As if my left arm were broken, I cradle the internal payload of a firebrand munition, wrapped in torn seat lining.
I need those helmets off. Ajax couldn't even take out his own trash, I mock. My voice is ragged. How admirable! Seneca chuckles.
He would, but Atalantia has him under lock and key. Such is her grief at the death of precious Lysander. Shall we formalize it?
Seven razors unfurl. Mine remains on my hip.
What did he promise you, Seneca?
A taut ship each,
one of the golds says. That's the price of my life.
Draw your iron, boy. Ajax made me promise you'd die well. Does any man die well if he cannot look his killer in the eye?
I peer around at the grim visages of the battered warhelms.
Which of you will it be? Which of you will kill the last heir of Selenius? Don't you want me to know, as I lie dying?
Oh, do I know my people? Their helmets unfurl to reveal their faces. My name still means something. They want me to see their eyes as they kill me. They want me to comprehend their superiority. And each wants to deliver the blow, and with it declare themselves stronger than my decrepit bloodline. They are the future. Not the last blood of Loon, who couldn't even survive a week at the front. And they want me to know it. I take my razor and let it unfurl into the killing blade.
No bribe? No begging? Seneca asks. I expected more whinging from the entitled cur.
As a human, I am entitled only to death.
That's the spirit, Seneca smiles with his pack. Kill the pixie.
Seven peerless butchers slip forward. My left hand pulls the activation wire of the firebrand payload. I drop the seat lining and toss the payload into the air. I bury my face in the sand. The air stills as the firebrand detonates overhead. It releases no kinetic wash of energy, only spasms of ultraviolet light brighter than that of a nuclear explosion. It makes no sound. Even with my head in the sand, I go blind. But so do the bare-faced killers. As they scream from the weapon flash, burning their retinas, I search myself for the fear that has stalked me since I landed on this planet. I need not search further than what I felt in the Hydra burrow. Fear writhes like a dark, maggoty river from my pelvis to the tip of my spine, pulsing, roaring. Not fear of death. Fear of failure. Fear of being a fool. Fear of inconsequence. Fear of being alone. Fear of proving I am nothing more than my grandmother's puppet. Fear that I am weak and meant for the maggots. But the mind's eye waits for me like an old glove. I am the last of its acolytes. It is not grandmother's any more. It was never an inheritance. I earned it by suffering as a boy, as she did as a girl. Fear is the torrent. My transition into the folds of harmony is fulfilling. My eyes may be blind, but my mind sees. The world rushes through the multisensorial pupil of the mind's eye. The projection stems from memory. I see the grains of sand as they were before the blast of light. I feel the weight of the men on its surface, smell the musty sweat of unwashed armor, the bitter roast of coffee, the sweet reek of combat chemicals and the protein cubes they ate before they descended. Blood pumps in their veins. Insulated feet slide in their boots. I feel their skins. Knowing where instinct will take them, where training will guide them to my blade like sheep to slaughter. I see them in the blindness, and I take on the winter whirlwind stance of the willow way.
Are you awake or asleep, Lysander?
I slip forward. Three die without even swinging their razors. The pommel of the Bellona razor jolts in my hand as the blade carves through pulse armor, bone and flesh of the third man. I feel the heat of blood sluicing down my arm. hear the puking as it comes out of the man's mouth. I pull the razor upward from his belly, holding his sword hand down, and saw through his breastplate. I stop shy of his heart, so that he will continue to scream. I trip him and ride his momentum down to the ground, rolling forward, then upward, and crouching on a knee. They shout to one another now, the noise of the dying a bedlam to muddle their ears. Grav boots whine as one takes blindly to the air. I rip the pulse fist off the dying man. With the mind's eye I sort through the soup of sound until I find the whine of the grav boots and feel the reverberation. I swivel toward it, brace myself on a knee, lead the sound by several meters and fire 5 shots in a diagonal line. I hear the snapping sound of a pulse shield absorbing the blast. There he is. I fire 30 shots until I hear the pulse shield collapse with a scream. Metal and man crashed down into the sand. 4 down, 3 left. I slide toward the ship as they fire at anything that makes noise. Grav boots whine at my 11 o'clock. I fire a full stream from my cover. The man gets away. 7 seconds pass. There is a thump in the desert. My visitor doesn't want any escaping either. The last 2 are difficult to locate. My memory is outdated now by a minute, but as I killed, I populated the mental image with my victims. I know the 2nd body is approximately 9.5 meters west and has a pulse fist still. I know the 4th body creates a tripping barrier between a broken wing of the downed bomber and the fuselage, and when I hear a clink, I know one of the 2 survivors is checking the pulse of the 1st corpse, 2 meters behind me. I swoop to kill him with a backhand flick of the razor. It glances off his risen helmet. I parry his 1st riposte, knowing it would come as a lower thrust because he was in a crouch, and it is the natural transition strike to prepare for a diagonal downward slash. I parry that slash and 3 more blows of a tight set. He is a clever swordsman, far stronger supplemented with his armor, but he relies upon sustained contact to know where I am. I break off, wait, and as he probes the darkness with tentative thrusts, I rotate around and slip soundlessly forward. The razor digs the roots. It severs his leg at the thigh. The 2nd strike takes his hand, the 3rd his ankle. I let him bleed out. His groans give me cover to move. Seneca calls to his compatriots. None answer but the wounded.
"What the fuck?" he growls.
I hear his razor hissing through the air as he swings wildly. His pulse fist roars.
"You little prim bastard! How can you see?"
"Rather, how is it? You are blind, Seneca." As I move quietly over the sand, I can hear the heart blood pumping out of the dying men, glug, 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 into their broken armor. "Is this how you saw your future?" He fires at the sound of my voice. Unlike the others, he is difficult to find. I think he's stripped off his boots too now. His heart rate is steady, his feet quiet despite his mass. This is a real killer. To guard Ajax's back, he'd have to be. "Is there even a future past this moment, Seneca?" He fires again and misses again. He's back near the ship. I weave through the downed bodies and find a pulse fist. I set it back down. It doesn't seem honorable. Only an animal does not plan past the moment. I slip sideways as he fires at where I was. "So what does that make you?" The sand is cold under my bare feet as I stalk closer. It's a trap. He's hunched forward now, not bothering to speak. He waits for me to make a sound. Obliging, I toss a rock against the hull. He ignores it, but he does not ignore my feet as I push off the sand to jump toward him. He fires as if I were running. Blisters bubble on my feet as the pulse blast warbles just beneath them. I land a hair too close and swing my razor down. He catches it in his hand. There's a jolt as it splits his gauntlet and divides the radius and ulnar bones down the elbow. It sticks there. I sense his razor coming for my belly. I toggle my blade into a whip and twist to the side, holding onto the razor pommel with my left hand. His blade misses most of me, but bites hard into my hip bone. The pain is excruciating. His left shoulder crashes into my face. I stumble backward, retract the razor out of his arm, and parry his following slash upward. I push away from him as I fall. He pursues. I switch my razor back into a whip and lash it around his ankles as they pass each other mid-stride. Then I transition the razor back to rigid form, and from my knees deliver the coup de grace of the willow way, the weeping noose. The whip, encircling his ankles, stiffens and retracts into a straight metal line. It goes through armor, flesh, and bone to do so. With his feet cut off at the ankles, Seneca falls with a crash. "No!" he roars on the ground, slashing wildly. I gather myself into a crouch and stay out of range.
"No! Fucking brat! Fucking child! They said you were a pixie!"
It would seem they judge the wrong virtues. I wait for his riven body to tire. When his protests grow weak, I approach and stand before him. I favor the deep wound in my hip. "Who is your favorite poet?" I ask.
"What?"
Seneca barks. "Your favorite poet, man." He sighs.
"Kipling."
I sort through what comes to mind and decide upon a passage. "Time hath no tide, but must abide the servant of thy will. Tide hath no time, for to thy rhyme the ranging stars stand still. Regent of spheres that lock our fears, our hopes invisible, oh, 'twas Certus at thy decrees, we fashioned heaven and hell."
"Fuck you, you fucking per—"
I decapitate Seneca. As his head rolls to the sand, I let go of the mind's eye, and the world throbs. I am spent. Exhaustion falls like a sweaty anvil. There are wounds upon my body that I did not notice until now. Lines of fire race along two deep gashes in my thigh, though the most painful is the last one Seneca gave me because I passed on the pulse fist in favor of the razor. Apparently honor is expensive. Then from behind a man applauds. "Apollonius, our Valii wrath, I presume?"
"Indubitably. So the mind's eye is real after all. Atalantia swore it was a myth, but to see it, ah, to see it."
"Octavia refused to teach her," I say. "Is that what you desire? My grandmother's secrets?"
"Beggar the whole bounty for this chief prize."
"The eye is not a razor to be wielded by any man," I say, taking a seat on the ground in exhaustion.
"I am not just any man. Would any man have such demons as I? Ajax, Atalantia, Atlas?"
"They were responsible for your stay in Deepgrave, I gather. But what of the source of all this? What of Darrow?"
"A kinship bonds all men betrayed, for they alone know the deepest breaking of the soul. In time he must fall, so I might rise. But what savvy butcher would loosen the vice that keeps his demons in thrall before their comeuppance comes due?"
"Then the answer is no."
"No."
His laugh is beautiful and presumptuous. "Atalantia and Atlas are not my enemies."
"But Ajax's, after his betrayal?"
"How long has he followed me?" I do not answer him. He chuckles to himself.
"One is the father, the other the lover. They will choose Ajax. Without my aid, you will die here, Seed of Loon. Without my aid, you will die anywhere."
"I have no quarrel with you, Apollonius, but I will not be bridled with a debt to you either."
"Yet you begged me to aid you.
That was the boy inside. He is dead.
That was 5 minutes ago.
Are you the same you were then? Is Seneca? He does not reply as I stand. You sound hungry, Apollonius. I do not feel stronger now than I did 5 minutes ago. I am no supreme being with a plan for escape. All I know is that there is more inside me than I knew. If I die, it will not be on my knees. Menace enters his voice.
I could kill you now. I am not these men.
Yes, you could. But you won't. The sand sighs as his mass steps forward.
Are you so sure, little seed?
Reasonably. Though we have never met, I know there is one thing Apollonius, our Valii Wrath, cannot resist. I stand and cut the mission node from my neck and hold it out for him. Huge metal fingers take the device. A good show. Apollonius stands in silence as I forage from the dead. I am far clumsier outside the mind's eye, but I fear the toll it would take to sustain it. I may die in the desert, but if I took his offer, it would mean war against Atalantia and Atlas. I would give legitimacy to his faction against theirs. After Atalantia's attempt to take Heliopolis, the Votum might come over to me just to spite her. After Seraphina's death, the Rim might join Apollonius. They know his martial worth. Or they might declare war on Atalantia if my testimony is accusatory regarding Seraphina's death. I could ruin Atalantia if I went with Apollonius. But what would that do to Gold? She is apparently our best tactician, and despite Ajax's cruelty, despite her capricious vanity, I still love her as family. Ajax's treachery may still be his own. Moreover, Gold cannot afford that divide, just as the worlds cannot afford a man who wrecks a planet simply to win a battle. I may not be what I thought I was. This world itself may just be a maze without a center, but I will not wait to die. I will not wait to be bridled by another. I will go forward as I see fit. I stand waiting for Apollonius to stop me after I've taken all I need from the dead Golds. When he does not, I reach for Seneca's grav boots. They are gone. Apollonius chuckles.
You don't get everything you want, little seed.
He picks some choice items from my haul for himself.
A good show, says the hopeful Ortak.
He pats my head.
Even if you survive this walk, you can never best Darrow, if that is your intent. He would climb up your blade to chew upon your jugular. To best a living god, it is not enough to survive, nor to eat the ambrosia of conquest. Who would follow a churlish princeling over that slave-made war? After all, you have no sense of theatre.
He claps me on the shoulder so hard my teeth rattle.
Enjoy your walk. I will be watching.
I walk north, blind, but blinded no more. Uncertain of where I go, but certain of one thing. Ajax abandoned me to the enemy. He tried to kill me. Darrow tried to kill me. Seneca tried to kill me. The desert tried to kill me. But I am still here. Pain the only proof I am not yet dead. Be it one of anguish or joy, my life is mine. I have earned it back, and I have no intention of wasting it.
Chapter 40. Ephraim. Kirdakan. The burner's on its last legs as I tap it over the railing to see the ash spiral down. I've done my bit and submitted a full tactical brief regarding how the Skoogie could neutralize much of Quicksilver's mine security. Now I watch the Braves prepare in the gymnasium of the Heart of Venus and marinate in the guilt of being complicit to genocide.
I'm an old hand at briefs in the legions as an investigator. They sit in digital folders and gather electronic dust until they are deleted to cover the political arse of whatever high-up gave the contrary go. All analysis supported my decision, is their favourite line. Valdir is Sefi's Varkir, her warlord. He's used blunt force trauma to pound a legacy from Mars to Mercury, surviving a decade that sent more than 70% of Sefi's commanders to Valhalla. He wants a frontal assault, so a frontal assault it'll be. No niggling brief from a mercenary will dissuade him. It'll work, I'm sure. With the hard-boiled legions the heart is packing, even the citadel of the Republic might fall. But it will turn so many civilians and backline Republic troops into meat confetti that Mars will loathe them for centuries. The faceless future dead make me think of the sounds my boys made as they were skinned on Luna. It makes my hand shake for Z. That won't be the end of the killing. It'll be the beginning. Only famine is uglier than occupation. What would Volga say if I told her this was the price of her life? I rub my temple, trying to ease the vibrations of the hot drill digging into my brain. I'm just destined to be a footman to devils, I guess. I light another burner. It goes down before I know it. Below, obsidians study Quicksilver's robots, machines meant to kill blood and bone. I wouldn't face them for anything in the world. You've been avoiding me. I look over to see Pax coming from a grav lift. Consolation isn't my thing, I reply. He peers over the railing without expression. He's grown harder since I took him from that Lion Guard shuttle. How could he not? Braga and his other bodyguard amble behind him. They watch me without much appreciation. I'm emblematic of their queen's new way. I guess even a warrior race has to concoct new ways to die, I mutter. Death by axe has to get tedious after a while. I twirl a new burner. You think it's going to be a massacre? Either in the taking or the keeping, don't you? He doesn't respond immediately. I don't know everything. What I do know is that the Obsidians will defend Cimmeria better than Quicksilver ever did. Maybe even rebuild it. Might be better for the Reds this way. Sefi knows the danger of letting them boil over. They'll outnumber her people 100-1. When Atalantia comes, maybe they'll stand together. Even if they don't, I don't know. Maybe the Obsidians have earned this day more than anyone. Cimmeria is just one continent, I reply. The richest in helium, sure, but Apollonia is the heart of Mars. Aegea will go into a frenzy. This is civil war within a civil war, the death of the Republic. Without helium, no. Obsidian is a land power. They'll have to trade the helium for it to be worth anything. If the Obsidians get Cimmeria and dig in, Aegea will negotiate. And even if the Vox have my mother, my tribe is resilient. Victra's still out there. Telemanuses, maybe. He goes quiet. They'll ally with Obsidian to face Atalantia, if the Vox don't eat the Republic. Yes. He's written off his father on Mercury, then. Without the Sovereign to lead a rescue fleet, they're as good as dead. Do you think your mother knew about this? I ask. He sighs. I don't know. Judging by the scale of the operation, I assume she had to. Subtlety isn't Sefi's strength, and she doesn't know all my mother's tools. So the fact that it's reached this point means either Victra clued my mother in, Sevro did, or she just found out because she's her, was her. He rolls his jaw, looking 10 times his age. He's been different since he discovered his mother's demise. While Electra has squawked on and on about revenge,
He's just gone quiet. Of course, Hatchetface thinks life is just a substance to be pushed through. With a brain like Pax's, he's already guessed there's nowhere to push. It's just a hard road to a cliff, with all the good ones falling over it far too quick. "You want to talk about it?" I ask. "No." We stand in silence for a while. "Don't," he says when he hears my intake of breath. I lean forward and light another burner and offer him one. "I'm 11. "So, we beat cancer, remember?" He shrugs and takes the burner, holding it like it's straight black smack. I light it for him. "Mother would kill me. Thought your da was the killer." "He wouldn't notice." "Come on. Petty doesn't look good on you. At least your da's slick. Mine was just a horny grunt who passed his seed for a 10K bonus. Keep the Legion strong," I snort. I don't like seeing packs like this. It depresses me. I should say something interesting, but I can't think of something he wouldn't just shoot down. "All right, let's get real. Met a man once," I say as Pax becomes a cloud. He doesn't cough. Good on him. Neither did I. "Wasn't much younger than you. It was before the Legion Wardhouse got a hold of me. Was a lookout for the local tough when I heard they were selling ice frise down by the Light Plaza. You know, that mound. Heroes Plaza or whatever now." He nods. "Anyway, got caught stealing said frise. I was going to get cuffed real bad by the local urbanes when a man piped up for me. Said I was with him. The urbanes give him one look, a long salute, and went on their way. He was a grey. Looked such a legend, leaning on the fountain like he owned it. Had a Titan Rain badge on his chest, a shattered rear beneath. A shower of golden teardrops on his face, inky in Legio 13 blacks. You weren't around then, but even Goals gave that sort a nod." I roll my burner in my hands. Smoke that burner like the unimpressed footman of a god. I remember that clear as day. Jove, he looks slick. He gave me my first, like I'm giving you yours. I asked him if he was a hero, and he looked me dead in the eyes. Pax looks over, and he said, "Fuck heroes, kid. It's all about being slick enough to squeak through. That's the last man standing." Took that to heart, and here I bloody am. "And what's that supposed to teach me?" he asks. "Be an arsehole?" "I don't know. Don't be like your folks, I reckon. It ain't on you to save the world. They were some impressive people, all told. I ain't saying you're not. But they was them. And look where they are." I set a hand on his shoulder. "I want you to get old, that's all." "Why? I'm just a mark to you." "Everyone's a mark to someone." "That you a pretty credit Seffy's someone's mark." I hold the smoke in my lungs until they tighten. "Guess I'm telling you because age doesn't look good on me. But I think it'll look good on you, that's all. That's the pep talk." He looks back down at the Braves. "You're shit at pep talks." "Yeah, well, maybe that's why I'm alive, and why you're wearing Trigg's ring." He plays with the chain. "He was as good as we get, just a shish kebab in the end." "My father wishes he knew him better," Pax murmurs. "You don't have to pander." "Truly. Say what you want about my da, but don't ever think he doesn't notice his men. It's the best thing about him. When they go, it breaks him." "Well, he's the one giving the orders." "Someone has to." He looks at the fire of the burner as it works its way through the tobacco. "I don't hate him. I mean, I do, but I don't, if that makes sense. I hate him for leaving for Venus, but not for Mercury. At his best, he's how men should be. So maybe that means it's the world that's flawed." "That's the damn truth." We lean and smoke in silence. He really is a good egg. I don't give a shit about Seffi's instructions to brown nose him. If she tells me to use him, I'll pop her between those black eyes.
Grania, it is time.
Pax and I jump at the voice. Neither of us noticed Osgard sneak up behind us. For once, he's not in good humour. The shaman's eyes are rimmed with ash.
The Kyr assemble for the Kyr Dakan. As Efe, you must join.
I squint at him. The what for the what as what? You're letting a grey into the Kyr Dakan? Pax asks in shock. The Lord Wager, he explains to me. The Vok's war ritual before important battles. My father was the first person not of the Vok to join one. He was an Efe-spaker, a wise planner. It's an honour. Seffi accepted my plan, I ask Osgard, dumbfounded. Not Valdir's. He laughs at me.
Grania is blind. Still he does not see. Freyhild and Skugi are already en route back to Mars. We press for Phobos for transfer to ore haulers.
He pauses, black eyes searching mine.
Come, Kyr Dakan awaits.
Pax understands the seismic statement Seffi is making, choosing the plan of a grey outsider to that of her most successful warlord. It is a declaration of change, and a choice on her part to pick risk over slaughter. Entirely too civilized to be true, but it is also spitting in her lover's eye while putting me directly in the crossfire between them. Valdir will be pissed. More than a little worried, I flick my burner away and follow Osgard. Pax grabs my arm before I get far. Whatever you do, don't bleed into the ribcage. Huh? If the campaign fails and you've given a blood wager, you're killed in ritual homicide. Yeah, I'm gonna need a few more details. Walk and talk, kid. Walk and talk. Incense burns from braziers on the stage of the opera house where Amel was butchered. It's so thick, my eyes itch back to the retinal nerves. I shift foot to foot in my place in the circle of towering war leaders as a giant albino aurochs with twisted horns is led onto the stage by Osgard's acolytes. Seffi approaches the muscled cow with an axe the size of a tree on her shoulder. I cross my arms and settle in to watch the pagan absurdity. Seffi tightens the glove on her right hand and crouches to peer into the beast's eyes with the tattoos on her closed eyelids. Apparently, it only takes a minute to see the aurochs' spirit. She whispers some alien sacrament that sounds like a pressure release on a gas rifle, and then rears back with the axe and splits its skull down the center in a tremendous blow. Blood sprays on my boots. The blade is so long, it divides the aurochs' neck halfway down the spine. I watch in mild horror as the beast shudders and sways and crashes to the floor, spurting blood everywhere. Seffi reaches into both sides of the split beast's head and rips out its tongue to show that it has been divided in half. Impossible precision. The obsidians rattle approval with the torques on their left arms as Seffi hands one half of the grisly appendage to her Valkyr, Valdir. The two eat the tongue raw, staring at one another with feverish enthusiasm that borderlines on erotic. My stomach twists as blood and juice trickle down their chins. Seems excessive, but these maniacs are just getting started. As the dead beast twitches on the floor, Osgard cavorts around it in some mad spasmodic dance that would be funny if anyone but an obsidian did it. The great folds of his skin ripple and flap as he waves his arms and shakes his bare torso. An atavistic song rumbles from the back of his throat. His circuit increases in speed until the aurochs' hooves no longer scrape the ground,
When it is still, Osgard walks one more circuit. His footprints in the blood have made an intricate spiraling shield glyph for protection. Utter nonsense. Then, the Vinkir, Valdir's four wind lords, come forward to each take a leg and together roll the aurochs on its back, where Osgard slices open its belly and butterflies its torso. He takes a black jar full of Jove knows what and fills his mouth before spitting it down on the aurochs' organs. Two hatchets appear in his hands, and he smashes them together until their sparks catch on his spittle. A fire mushrooms in the belly of the beast. Its organs crackle. The fat under its hide catches fire and curls the white hair. Soon, it's a conflagration. Flames dance over the faces of the obsidian war leaders as they chant together. Not even the incense can keep the claws of the burning intestines and liver from scouring the backs of my eyes. Tears stream down my face. At least the syndicate were a familiar fright. They chant until the fire subsides and leaves nothing but charred tissue and marrow leaking out cracked bones. The ribcage of the aurochs curves outward and reaches upward like a pair of fossilized hands. Osgard crouches amongst the steaming debris and lifts his arms, shouting some nonsense in Nergal about a prophecy of fortune in the firebones. He then asks for the Kirdakan, the Lord Wager. It starts with the Vargkir, the lowest-ranking winglords. Two women, dressed in more modern garb, drop strands of hair into the ribcage, wagering their honour against the battle's success. Their hair will be shorn in failure, and they will lose their ranks and become braves who must earn command all over again. A bold wager, and the one Pax recommended I take. Then the third, a man in tribal garb, looks at me, looks at Valdir, then Sefi, and drops a single golden torque. There's silence. Sefi looks like she's about to murder the man. Only Pax's rushed lecture on the way here saves me from turning around in bewilderment. It's the lowest form of wager, a single talk, a fraction of battle honour. An insult is what it is. Some of them don't believe in this gambit. As all the male Vargkir, then some of the higher-ranking Vinkir, give their meagre wages, I realise why. I could give a shit if they don't like Sefi's plan for modernization or her betrayal of the Republic. But the men protesting me, calling my plan bullshit, with each clattering talk and arrogant giant, I find my insides heating up at the professional insult. Barely off the ice and already superior to me, these savage idiots. When Valdir throws in a single talk as well, I nearly leave. He spits on the floor in my direction. Osgard translates his Nergal for me.
"You are no man," he echoes. "No Aethysbarger for the Volk. You are parasite. You have nothing to teach us but weakness."
He looks at Sefi and lifts his chin to expose his throat.
"You are my queen. I stood against gold with Nakamura, Arcadius, Vesuvian, noble greys. But this dog belongs in gutter. His scheme will fail, and Skugi will die for nothing."
He slaps his arms.
"We must show strength, not tricks, if we are to betray our oaths."
His supporters, mostly men, rattle their talks in agreement. Sefi doesn't reply. It's a sort of betrayal I'm not sure I understand completely. Osgard gives me a little nudge forward to make my wager. Valdir's protesters laugh in derision as I pull a piece of hair and they mutter there is no honour for a thief to risk. The anger boils up in me mighty fast. These uppity barbarians laughing at me. They don't even know what a rhetorical question is. "You all know what I did," I say, turning and looking at the giants in their obstinate black eyes.
I stole those gulls' spawn twice. You just scraped us up like vultures. And you call me a parasite? I was a son of Ares when you were still in the Dark Age, shitheads. I hunted Peerless while you were still serving them or pulling your people off the poles. But you call me a dog? Fair enough. Spit on my honour. I don't give a damn, but don't you ever, ever insult my work. I jab my hand against a fragment of ribcage bone. Bright blood leaks out the meat of my palm. I hold it over the ribcage and let it dribble down. The obsidians are stricken with confusion. Even Valdir looks like he swallowed a turd. Having seized the greatest claim to valour if today is a victory, I stalk back to my place as the obsidians murmur, and some put their hands to their foreheads in signs of respect. Osgard whispers in my ear,
"Your faith inspires me."
He's mocking me. The hangover of regret comes hard and fast. The anger floods out. It wasn't just memories Z protected me from. It was always myself, always the overcompensating pride of a street dog who can't bear to be laughed at, so he buys nice suits, drains his account on fashionable flats, yaps at monsters, gambles with people who can afford to lose. Well, Volga would be laughing her arse off now. The obsidian's quiet as Seffi walks to the ribcage. She plays with her long hair, then gives me a sinister smile and very casually draws a dagger to slice a chunk of flesh from her left forearm to toss into the ribs and match my wager. When she speaks, she does so to Valdir in common.
My way in victory, my head in defeat.
After the obsidians depart, Seffi stands watching the remains of the bones smoulder.
You will not be with your Skugi. They must move faster than you can follow.
I nod, happy with that.
You know you will be killed if we fail.
Seems we both will.
Pride blinds, she says. But sometimes it leads.
She sets a heavy hand on my shoulder.
I know our ways are strange to you, but hard ways are necessary to govern wild spirits. If we win, you will be my guest at the hunt of the last light. You will have much treasure. You will be honored. They do not see your worth. But I do, Horn. I see fear in you. Most run from that fear, but you spit in its face.
She lowers her face to mine.
As do I. As do I.
Chapter 41. Ephraim. Obsidian Rising. Warships rove over the birthplace of the Rising. So ends the tale of Ephraim T. Horn, ritually murdered or atomized by a particle beam. I stick my hands in my pockets. Lovely. The greatest heist of the war rumbles slowly into gear, and I'm pinned inside a fat-ass Julii ore hauler, heading toward Mars with no escape plan, no intel except what the obsidians give me, and no weapon, not even a wrench. To put the olive on top, I'm stone cold sober. Far from kicking my Z habit, I must have begged half the shadier looking braves on the heart of Venus for just the dust of a cut gram. Seems Seffi put the word out. Not even the former berserkers in their ranks will trade me some of their Republic stimpacks. I stare out the cramped bridge with doom squatting on my spine. The lights are dim. The pilot, a crack ripper blue from Seffi's allies, the Ro sect, hunches like a Karachi player in concentration over his controls, even though a mentally disenfranchised elephant could fly this tub. Behind him,
Osgard stands there, stroking his braided beard and eating walnuts without a care in the world. He's painted in his blue berry juice. Idiot.
You will not be ritually murdered or atomized, Osgard replies. The breath of the All-Mother herself will carry you to Valhalla.
Pass. I'll take a nomadic island on Venus with limitless pinks. He turns. Behind the annoyance in his eyes is a confidence that leaps far past the border of sanity.
Is that the depth of your soul?
Just the warm shallows. He sighs.
You will not die, Tin Man, because if you die, we have failed, and Sephi, too, will die. She cannot die.
Let me guess. You saw her fate in the Firebones.
Be careful not to insult a shaman on the eve of battle.
He comes so close, I can smell the eggs he have for breakfast in his beard.
You do not know what I have seen.
No offense, but I find your faith a little disturbing.
Bah!
He reels away.
I find your face disturbing. It is soft, like goat cheese. But I do not complain. You prepared Skoogie. You are good at what you do. So are they. To fret now is seed of angst.
Prepared, please. Like a few weeks' instruction will ready them for this. It would be so easy if Sephi didn't want so many mines. We could fly the haulers into the mines' loading docks and pump obsidians out. An old Reaper favourite. Problem is, to do that, we'd have to land hundreds of haulers at the same time at mines across a 1,000-kilometre theatre before the mines go into lockdown. Quicksilver's defence computers would quickly see the breach and eviscerate us. So a quarter of the mines will be taken that way. The rest require more creative infiltration by the Skoogie. As for the hunter-killer defence robots, well, there's a reason the obsidians are in full armour. If they follow my instructions, the Skoogie and Quicksilver-hating Reds will bypass the sensor grids in retired tunnels, infiltrate the exhaust ducts, access the power grid, and disable the anti-aircraft guns. Piece of pie. But the Skoogie aren't even close to ready for this kind of coordinated infiltration. I hear the steady drip, drip, drip of the bloodbath filling up. The obsidians think I believe in Sephi enough to risk my life on this gambit for the mines. It's gained me some respect from her bodyguard of Valkyrie, but not from Osgard. He knows I'm full of shit, because I've long suspected he's full of it too. Osgard sets his bag of walnuts on a gearbox and leans toward the pilot to whisper something. I pull out my burners to settle my nerves and find the pack empty. I left my stash in Olympia. Damn. I grab one of his walnuts and busy myself trying to open it as I stare out the Duraglass. The moon of Phobos and most of the remaining Republic defense fleet are on the opposite side of the planet now, along with Volga. Osgard eases back from the pilot and nudges me.
Have you seen a night gaze upon the pole with your flesh eyes?
He asks. Never been to either pole. Restricted zones. Savage locals.
Night gaze are the most tender of the ice's life. They grow only in darkness, but oh, the light they make of their own ichor. They are truly a gift from the gods.
Gift from the gods, I roll my eyes. For flying in a spaceship, your ancestors were made in test tubes, the night gaze by a drunk violent, and you believe in gods? Hell, I get the racket. For a man, you've done right fine by yourself with the matriarchs, but stop trying to con a con man. He shrugs, ignoring the insult.
Human knowledge is small. Universe vast. Mystery infinite. My gods were true before they were stolen and used against us. They are still true, and will be true long after we are food for the...
He freezes as he sees the walnut shells around my feet. His eyes flare wide and he grabs me, manhandling his fingers down my throat. I fight against him until I sick up all over his chest. I shove him and push too hard with my new leg, flying backward into the wall. I hit my spine on something sharp and hard. "What the hell?" I gasp.
"You ate from my bag?"
"I'll buy you another walnut, arsehole." I spit the bile out and wipe it out of my goatee. "Jove on eye, who does that?"
"Walnut?"
He squints at me.
"What is walnut, jackass?"
"These spirit berries from home. These for shaman only."
I squint. "I thought spirit berries were berries."
"No."
"Oh, well," I hiccup. "What's spirit berries do?"
"To see spirits and hear gods."
"Literally?" He's threading his hands through his beard in worry. "It's some sort of hallucinogen. That's about all I know. I look at my hands. Are they vibrating? The roof of my mouth tastes like chalk and asparagus and ice cream. Will I die?" He shrugs.
"We will see."
The walls turn to pulsing jelly as Osgard leads me through them like a drunk puppy. Seffi's war council was a blurry dream, all the orders fragmented in my head. If I focus on anything longer than a moment, the world pulses between reality and into some peculiar hidden fourth-dimensional plane. Keep the eyes moving. Stay lucid, old boy. Stay atop the high. You love drugs. You love drugs. We enter the mouth of a beast. No, just a hangar, empty of helium crates and filled with warriors. They vibrate like dark teeth. My head is spinning, whole body flushed with electricity. I've never liked psychedelics, too little control. Osgard jerks me out of the way as a column of Valdir's Stormbreakers jog past us in grey, heavy armour painted with blue runes to load into the assault transports. A goddess with a luminous headdress of white feathers floats before a pack of Valkyrie in sky blue armour. "Who is that?" I cry.
"Seffi."
"She looks fantastic." "Yes."
"She's going down herself?"
"But there are killer robots." He looked at me and I almost scream. The shaman has become a demon. His face is bright blue and his beard smokes. Fire leaks out his eyes and his mouth rumbles an orchestral thunder that is made of semi-solid mutating colours. "What if she dies?" I hear myself weeping. "What happens if Seffi dies?"
"A queen that does not ride at the vanguard is no queen," he bellows as Valdir stomps past,
looking as big as a thunderhead. His hydra skull bubbles cruel laughter.
"This is not her death. I have seen the griffin ascend on red wings."
"I mean, what happens to me?" I cry.
"You are high, my friend. Have courage and ride the tumult."
His laugh is cruel and mocking, and when he looks at me, lightning flashes in the veins of his black eyes. The whole world goes dark behind him and begins to tremble and distort. I fall down. The hard steel jars me out of the reverie. "It's just turbulence, you fool." Osgard picks me up like a toy and wraps my hand around a rung.
"Stay and witness the griffin rise."
He bats my arms away and runs off towards Valdir and Seffi. "Don't leave me," I moan. "Oh gods, oh gods." I curl up on the floor as the monsters trample past.
"Stay atop the high, stay atop the high."
I dive for safety into a pack of crates. Armour, I strap it on. It's too big. Grav boots. I don't want to fall into the ceiling. Lightning crackles there. I strap the boots on. They're huge, but the ankles
managed to lock higher up on my calves. That'll keep me safe. I grab an insidious weapon from the wall, a rifle of unknown and horrible power. Oh, Jove, what's that? Iridescent sea creatures from the depths of the ocean swim through my eyes, mingling with the warriors. The creatures disappear inside the metal bodies and entwine their souls with the savages the world thought to tame. A dark torrent streams from their mouths and forms a crackling cloud of lightning and unruly thunder over their snowy heads. The song! The death chant of the obsidians. I've heard it before, in the ruins of Luna, but not like this. Not ever like this. I don't just hear it. I feel it. The vibrations grip my bones with their terrible beauty. Before the soldiers of the gods, Osgard takes a creature from a pouch and lets it bite his tongue before devouring it whole. The chanting thickens. The clouds swirl. Suddenly, he throws off his cloak. He is naked beneath, his whole body painted blue, manhood swinging between his legs like a pendulum of power. He roars a horrible creed as he walks through the obsidians, his arms uplifted, stomping his grav boots. The obsidians join him in stomping, so that it feels like the heartbeat of a dead world awaking. Barga, Duna, he screams and throws down his arms. Duna, Fiel, Valdir and Sefi scream at him. The hangar doors retract, freezing wind pours in like the breath of a cold god, and Sefi is baptized in moonlight ahead.